Welcome to the Kickstart Podcast, where we highlight the stories of how professionals kickstarted and navigated their successful careers. My name is Preston, and on this episode, we have the pleasure of hosting someone who has worked at really impressive companies like Cabbage and Capital One in leadership capacities, is an avid supporter of the remote work culture, is now the founder and the chief remote officer of First Page Strategy, a global growth marketing agency. Jenna, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Absolutely my pleasure. So I guess a great way to start is by giving it back to you and ask that, you know, for those that don't know who you are, who might be unfamiliar with your background, would you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So as you said, I'm the founder and chief remote officer for First Page Strategy. We call ourselves FPS. I originally grew up on the West Coast of the US, kind of made my career from Seattle down to San Francisco, spent some years in the tech scene, and then just decided that I wanted to leave the 9-to-5 grind. I wanted to kind of move away from that traditional go to work all day, come home, vacation a couple weeks a year, rinse and repeat. And I wanted to work on my own terms. So I moved to Belize in 2016, started my company. We've been around for 7 years now, grown it to about 40 people across the globe, completely remote first, and really focused on like building a remote first culture and company and processes. And so, yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you for that wonderful summary. Now, before we talk about all the great things you're doing at FPS and of course, remote culture and your stance on that, I have to ask you, you know, you have an illustrious career working in a lot of different capacities within media and marketing. Like, how did you get into that field? I noticed that you didn't go to school for marketing. And so like, how did you get your first couple jobs? And then what really intrigued you about that as a career prospect and kind of, you know, off to the sunset, there you went.
Yeah. Wow. I got to really go way back to think about that because I've been a marketer for, 19 years now, but I have a journalism background and a graphic design background. And so marketing is, at its core, design and writing. So I feel like the basis of all marketing is writing and good design. And so that really, I was just really interested in a marketing career versus, you know, as a journalist coming out of school in 2005, that was when, you know, the start of kind of newspapers and traditional journalism, written word, was dying. And so I wanted to go where I guess the money was and where I could have a more of a career. And so I got into marketing, luckily, right around the time that social media was kind of taking off as a marketing forum. And so that's when people were just starting to use Twitter and tweet ups and stuff. I'm aging myself here a little bit, but that's kind of how I got in and started out as like a social media manager, kind of content writer, and just working from there. So that is like the basis and core of our agency is really good content and then SEO and stuff. So that comes from the background of my career.
That's really cool. Another thing I noticed that you didn't just work in social media at every single one of your jobs. You had exposure to different types of aspects within marketing. Was that intentional or, throughout your first couple of jobs, like, you know what? I don't want to just focus on social. There's so many other aspects of marketing that's really, really intriguing to me. And I kind of want to taste it all.
Yeah, it was kind of an evolution, right? Like I was really passionate about social when I first started in it. And I did that for a little while. But then I started getting more into some of the data driven growth marketing stuff. And so I wanted to get more into that track. And then I wanted to do wider than just social. I wanted to do also content. And then that turned into owning inbound at a startup and kind of all the things that comes with inbound from SEO and email and all that stuff. So yeah, so it's just a natural evolution. Just I think was anyone that is kind of growth focused and wants to grow in their career, you look at where you can expand into next, what you can learn next. And that's kind of what happened with me as well.
Cool. I know that before you chose to make that huge move to Belize and start FPS, you also worked at more recently Cabbage and Capital One. Just for the audience, mm-hmm. Can you share more context? Like what did you do at these companies? What did you like best about them? Why did you end up leaving a company like Capital One?
So actually, I was working at a payment startup. I'm like most of my career in San Francisco, I worked for fintech companies as a marketer, either a sole marketer or on inbound or growth marketing. marketing. And so I was working for a payment startup in San Francisco. We were actually acquired by Capital One. And I'll have to say that's like the most interesting turn point in my career, because I was would hands down like never work for a company that big again. It was really interesting, like coming from a someone that worked at only startups and really being able to get your hands dirty and work on so many different things, wear so many different hats, move quickly, test, iterate. Like that's what I was used to. Going into a company like Capital One, it's very large. There's lots of red tape, lots of people, lots of approval processes. And so that was really hard for me. And I went back to the startups after that and started working for Cabbage. And I really thrive a lot better. And this is kind of who we look for in our clients as well, is like, we want to do really good work as marketers. And to do that, you kind of have to be given the runway to test and kind of move quickly, get things done quickly. You know, SEO and a lot of marketing takes product changes that happen quickly. And so that's really hard in a large company. And large companies like Capital One are also less focused on that data-driven marketing oftentimes too, right? Their names are so big that they, you know, have won the brand game and people are kind of just coming to them no matter what. And so I found the marketing that we were doing there when I was working on their content and social team, I was actually working on building a blog and content site out for their small business credit card, was that they had no metrics assigned to it. They just wanted to do it, right? But they didn't care like what the metrics or growth were behind it. And I prefer to work in like metrics and growth and data-driven marketing. And that's always on the startup side where they really care a lot about acquisition, who's coming, how many people are coming, how are we like doubling and tripling? And that's the kind of marketing that I like. So that's just, yeah, the evolution of me being in corporate America versus me being in startup America.
I'm sure it was a good experience nonetheless, right? You wouldn't really have gotten to the opinion that you really didn't like working at big companies if you didn't ever try, right? And so you got that taste. Yeah, and you did well. And then you left that now for obvious reasons. And then you joined Cabbage, going back to the start game. But Cabbage wasn't a tiny startup, right?
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was a well-established tech brand at that point. We had a good amount of people at the company. They had a great culture. They were, you know, but they were still kind of high growth and tech. So I guess it maybe they weren't a startup. I don't know. We could call that mid-range tech or something, but they weren't public either. So yeah, so that's where they were at when I was there.
Mm. And so you went to San Francisco, got into that tech game. You went through an exit, which a lot of people don't do, which is really, really cool. You work at Capital One, Cabbage. So now we're at, you know, pre-FPS. So like what really inspired you to start FPS? What was like that kind of crossroads scenario? What did that look like? Were you nervous? Were you scared? Was this your first entrepreneurial pursuit? Did you do other businesses or projects before? So maybe you were kind of used to that. You knew what to expect. Please share with us like what went on in your head.
I felt in an interesting place that I think a lot of, you know, mid early 30 somethings find themselves in. My sister just recently experienced this. And I've had friends experience this where you've kind of been pushing your whole career towards this growth, this place, right? Like either becoming a CMO or becoming a VP or whatever that career path looks like. And while I was reaching the top, I realized that the top didn't necessarily feel like happiness to me. And I just wanted something more. I didn't want to be in corporate America anymore and pushing to the top and like tired all the time and traveling all the time and not having time for hobbies or family or friends or dating or whatever it is that I wanted to do in my spare time. And I was working in tech during the time that, you know, they kind of poo-poo now, where it's like making fun of the fact that there were game rooms and free lunches and like all those things that at the time I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky. I can't believe I have this career that buys me lunch every day. And we have these happy hours. We drink beer at work. We go on these like amazing, you know, cabin trips together. But really that becomes all encompassing and you work a lot and you don't leave the office for lunch. And so I just reached a point where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I didn't know what that next step looked like. And to be honest, it was really rough. It was like a very low point in my life, in my career, because I was like, I don't want to be in San Francisco. I don't want to be doing this career. I kind of just like was pushing against all of it. It was like, I need to do absolutely something different. And it took me a long time. And that's the toughest place to be, right? When you don't know what your next step is. And so if anybody's in that right now, like, I trust you, you'll get to the other side of it and you'll like understand why it all happened once you get to the other side of it. But like before you get to the other side, it was really hard. And so I struggled for a little while, and I hadn't been an entrepreneur before. No, it was my first experience with going out on my own. I'd always had a paycheck. I think that that's a, you know, obviously I'm sure you've talked about this a lot. That's like a really big leap that people are very afraid of, is like, how do I leave the security of the paycheck, the benefits and what have you? And depending on where you are in your life, if you have a family or whatnot, you have other people benefits, you might not be able to make that leap. But I was at a point where I was single. I didn't have anything I was attached to. I'd already moved away. So I was living somewhere where I didn't have family at in San Francisco. And so I kind of had those strings already attached slightly. But like, yeah, not only did I leave the paycheck, but I left the country. So it was like a really big leap. I left and went to Belize, and it took me a long time to figure out how to kind of like unravel and unpack my life in the US. And so, yeah, it was very interesting.
It's probably a loaded question, but why did you leave the country? Like, what about Belize attracted you?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I was just in a place where I didn't know where I wanted to go next. I was thinking about different places in the U.S. I was exploring whether I wanted to move to Colorado. I'd kind of been on a few trips across the U.S. Like, did I want to move to Colorado? Did I want to move to Atlanta, Georgia? And I went on vacation at that time to Belize. And for just like 10 days, I kind of felt this like a sense of the Gianna that I wanted to be for those 10 days. And I just felt a really strong calling. Like, I was like, I want to feel like this every single day of my life, like when I'm on vacation, not just for 2 weeks a year that people go on vacation, right? Like, I want to feel like I do on vacation 365 days a year. And how do I move somewhere that most people only go to on vacation, but then also still make my career work? And so that's kind of where that started, is just wanting to chase that feeling of being, like you feel when you're on vacation, totally relaxed, you know? Yeah. So that's how that happened.
What would be your advice to people that are in that same situation right now, whether they don't know what to do as the next job? Maybe they're looking for a job right now. Maybe they're considering multiple life-changing decisions, like either changing a career, moving to a new state. Like, what has helped you kind of process and synthesize everything that prevented you not going insane, to be able to kind of remain composed and thoughtful and intentional and ultimately executing on the result that you wanted?
Yeah, so I'm a little hippy dippy, so I don't know that my answer is going to be for everybody, but like, I really just feel strongly in kind of following a calling or a feeling, like a gut feeling. I did a lot of work with listening and kind of journaling and list making, and I read a book, May Cause Miracles by Gabby Bernstein, and it kind of helped me dig into what were my fears? What was I running away from? What did I want? What did my life look like happiness look like to me? And kind of like writing that all out and visualizing it and then following it and just really following that gut. Like, I had a gut feeling where I was like, I belong in Belize. And I followed that, even though it was wild, and, you know, to call my parents and be like, hey, I'm leaving in 1 month to Belize, you know, all these steps are they're crazy, right? A little bit risk-taking, not a lot of people would do it, but I just followed a feeling. And so if you have any calling, like any passion where it feels like you should be doing it or lights you up in any way, like, follow that.
I'm envious sitting here listening to you, because there have been times in the past 5 years where I wanted to move somewhere else, but just didn't. And
yeah,
at that time, I thought it was a valid reason. Retrospectively, I'm like, you know what? It's just the reason that I concocted. It was an excuse, right? And I'm like, I could have, if I said yes and I moved, everything would have been fine. And so
yeah,
it's really cool. I don't think it's, you know, hippy dippy at all. I very much believe in the power of visualizing, writing down, being intentional, putting your wants and desires out there, and letting it come back full circle. So I think that's absolutely epic that it happened to you. I'm talking to someone that's living it. So this is Talk to me about the early days of your business. Now, like, this is your first entrepreneurial like pursuit. Like, did you have like money saved? Did you start a little bit on the side while you're at Cabbage? Was it just, you know, you quit Cabbage and you cold turkeyed it? Like, was it difficult for you to get your first clients? Like, what were the early days like as like a, you know, first time founder?
Yeah. This is actually really funny. And this is, I think, proof. Like, if, you know, if you're saying visualizing and follow, you know, a leap or a thought or something you want to do, I always say like the universe will support big gestures and just do it and it'll work out. And that's exactly what happened to me, because I was just like flying by the seat of my pants, really. I had no money saved. I was living paycheck to paycheck in San Francisco, one of the most expensive cities in the US. It's gotten even worse since then. We know this. And I think I had like 1 month severance, and I was like, you know, I'd spent about 1 week. I was in a highly sought after role at Cabbage. So I had people recruiting me all the time. Immediately, I was like thinking about, should I do something else or go somewhere else and kind of interview someone for a different position, or should I just leave? And I made the decision. I was like, well, 1 month of severance goes, I got laid off, by the way, 1 month of severance goes like really far in Belize, or it goes like very short in San Francisco. So I was like, I just was like, I got to do this and I got to do it now. So I moved to Belize with not very much money. And my idea was that, hey, you know, I'm just going to like consult and freelance. I had a great network of people, and I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I just knew that I didn't want to be stressed out anymore. I didn't want to be like, you know, working for a company where you're just like a number in a spreadsheet at the end of the day. And so I was not planning on starting an agency at all. I was just going to go solo, and I moved with barely any money. And then I think I was there for 2 or 3 months, and I had like all these things happen to me. Like, I wrote about leaving my career and moving to Belize, and Fast Company picked it up, and I wrote a couple articles for Fast Company, and then all these people emailed me, and I ended up like in all of that being asked to pitch a company to do their SEO. And they said, we're about to fire our SEO agency. Would you want to pitch us? And this was only because I had linked to this company in my Fast Company article. So they saw the link in their backlink profile in there. Our SEO tool. And so the founder emailed me. So at that time, I was like, I don't even know what it means to pitch. I don't know what it means to have an agency. I don't know who else would work with me on this. But I was like, totally fake it till you make it. I was Googling, like, you know, how do you build a pitch deck? I was like recruiting a guy that worked with me in SEO and my over to like partner with me on this in his spare time. So we signed that client. That's now our biggest client. 7 years later, we've worked with them. We have, you know, a very large contract. 40 people work on their account. It's been quite a journey. And that's how I became an agency. And so really, it was just like flying by the seat of my pants, stumbling through it, figuring it out. And like the universe totally supported me like every step of the way.
I think some of the best businesses happen by accident, right? It's very easy. Mm-hmm. Like, and for me, I work in tech. It's very easy to kind of follow step one, step two, step three on how to be a founder, right? Like get an MBA or like create an MVP and raise your round and then, you know, do your best. I think a lot of other businesses happen just like yours. And I really appreciate you being open and honest with that. And I think to go from not knowing what you wanted, who you were, moving to a new country, having this amazing coincidental opportunity and then having the courage to pursue it and not to quit out of like being overwhelmed or scared, I think is a key lesson that a lot of people can learn, especially the viewers who are listening right now. And then it became your biggest client. And was it kind of easy? Like, did you scale really quickly? Did you hire like first couple, you know, your first 3 to 5 were full time? Were they more contractors? Was it just evenly split? Like, how did you grow your company to the massive kind of state it is today?
Yeah, well, it just was done slowly year by year, honestly, by doing great work. Like, I've always been just in like a really hard worker and good at what I do. And I care a lot about what I do. And so I just put everything into that one client. And we did really great work for the first year. I had one other person working for me. When we reached the second year, they were like, hey, maybe we want to do email and lead gen too. So then I layered on contractors. I had, you know, 1099 people. I signed up to be a HubSpot partner. They kind of had a bunch of training and program to walk you through how to price and build like billable rates and do sales. And then by the third year, they were like, hey, maybe we want to do, you know, link building and video marketing also. So we layered that on. So it's been like year by year by year. We just started working with them when they were, you know, at the right stage and kind of high growth and needing a partner. And we've just been good friends. I have to give a lot of credit to the founder as well. But yeah, so it's just been a slow process year over year. But I will say, like, the one thing that, you know, the business was a little bit accidental, but the thing that's really carried it forward and has worked for me is the passion that I've held to make this work so that I can work on my own terms and have like that work-life harmony that you never have in office or working for any other company, right? Like there was always like, I need to make this work and I'm going to grind and like hustle to make this work because I want to live in another country. I don't want to work 40 hours plus a week. I want a vacation as much and whenever and wherever I want. And so being able to really see that lifestyle as like my true north and my vision was what helped, you know, put the drive behind me to build the company. So having a purpose, I think, is the most important thing. Like even if it's accidental or you've been planning this business for 10 years, like if you have a strong purpose behind you, like you'll make it work.
Were you able to grow your company while following and abiding by the 40-hour work week in the beginning? Or were you like, hey, this is like the first 2 to 3 years, I need to grind like 50, 60, 70 hours a week. Let's go. Let's make it happen.
No, I have not worked 40 hours a week in 7 years since I started my business. Not once. I started out at first, like almost feeling guilty because I was like, I don't feel like I'm working enough, right? Like I moved to an island in Belize, San Fergus Key. I was at the beach all the time. I met a bunch of new friends. We're at cornhole tournaments. Like I'm just kind of doing all this fun stuff, going out on boat trips, but I'm still running this business at a, you know, small amount of hours a week. Now it's a lot larger and a lot more demanding, but I still like, if I lose my boundaries, then I've lost the purpose of this business for me. So I'm very strict about my boundaries and making sure I take time off and like not working all day long. I never work on the weekends or my evenings. This is the ethos of my company. Mm. We're working really hard and this is what we offer. Like one of our benefits is time freedom. We say we have 32-hour work weeks, non-linear. We don't care how you work or where you work as long as you kind of deliver, you know, do async work within our project management tool. So this is a lot of what I focus on is like, how do you get your work done, work smart, not hard, but have like time freedom to do all those things that require in life, like going to a doctor, birthday parties, children, like whatever it is for you, hiking, reading, traveling, blah, blah, blah. I think it's so important that those are the bigger parts of your life and work is a smaller portion of your life.
This is such a different narrative to like the typical founder kind of path out there where they're like, hey, to be a founder, you have to just, you know, 7 days a week, at least the first 2-3 years to get your business up and running. To hear that, you know, you've never worked a 40-hour work week for me, and I'm sure a lot of people listening is really like shocking and just different. And so like, what are some tips that maybe you can kind of share that worked really well for you to kind of help you organize your schedule to be able to kind of have a wonderful harmony? Is it, you know, like time blocking? Are you like, you know, no meetings? Like what do you do that's unique?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of things. I already mentioned it. You have to set your boundaries first and foremost. Like, what are your boundaries? Because my boundaries are not going to be your boundaries, Preston. And people work in different ways, right? So like, you might want to work your weekends, but you might not want to work Tuesdays and Thursday evenings when your kids have soccer practice, whatever your boundaries are, right? My boundaries were, I don't want to work my evenings, I don't want to work my weekend, and I need to, you know, vacation and take time off at least one time a quarter kind of a thing. So that was the start of it. I have since the beginning of my business, I don't do meetings on Mondays and Fridays. And so I do all my meetings on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. That allows me to have solid, like blocked out non-interrupted work time, which they call deep work now, right? Which is really important. And that's really where I get a lot of the like strategy, forward thinking, process writing done for my company that has to happen, right? Otherwise, if you don't set those boundaries, you're going to sit on Zoom all day long. especially after this whole pandemic thing, people think that Zoom is just all day long, right? And then also really important is, like, we use a pretty and massively in-depth, we've invested over $60,000 in a custom project management setup in ClickUp. We have, like, repeating tasks, templates. We have a task list every day. So I just manage, like, what's reasonable today, what's reasonable this week, what needs to push, like, what can I do? And just daily, like, looking at those task lists. So that's some of it. Mm.
It's, I was very much looking forward to chatting with you, because I too am an owner of an agency. Of course, it's not marketing, it's in with recruiting, but I know a business model as an agency where we are a for service business for companies. We work with and operate with different types of clients like you do. A lot of people say agency models are very, very difficult to do fully remote. So going to remote, and of course, you know, following up on what you just said about establishing and utilizing all these different tools and methods and systems to create good balance. Like, what would you say is, like, your go-to tips or advice to other business owners, to other teams out there who are struggling and who don't understand, like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do, I can, you know, I can have my team be fully remote and still be as productive. So, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, actually, you know, remote, there's such a weird, interesting conversation going on with remote work right now. And there's a lot, for a while, at least 2 years, there's been a lot of articles around different various large leaders at large companies kind of poo-pooing remote work and forcing people back in the office or trying to figure out what hybrid looks like, blah, blah, blah. The problem is they are not building a company that is remote first in a culture, process, and systems. They're trying to take how they worked and just stick everybody at home. And that doesn't work. And that's why we're talking about, like, a lot, there's a lot of noise around, you know, there's these remote focused positions that are going to start coming out, like chief remote officer, like I gave myself, right? Or a remote operations expert or whatever these remote first roles are, because there's a lot of voices in the remote first world kind of talking about how you solve these ways of working if you're a remote first company and how you change your culture. And so the three things that I think are the biggest that we focus on and that I can share are three things that if you want to really have a remote first company, that these are things you need to work on is access. So making sure that everybody has documented and centralized knowledge. So if your team can't go to find a document on how to do something, then that's a breakdown of your company, right? So we worked really hard to build what we called roadmaps and parachute plans, which is basically like outlines of someone's role to the 10th degree, you know, roadmaps of our companies, like everything that you need to get done, like how to request time off and stuff like that. We put it in our project management system, ClickUp, and we use Google Share Drive and 1Password. Everybody has passwords. Everybody has all the documents. Everybody has access, right? So like 40 people across different countries can access information at one time, no matter what. We also really focus on our tech stack, making it as lean as possible so that there's like two or three go-to places, not 20 go-to places. I know at every company I've ever been at, there's like one website for HR, one website for your paycheck, one website for your benefits, one website. And it's so confusing, right? So we focus a lot on like putting everything in ClickUp as our async tool. And then the second one is focusing on async. So this is the biggest thing that people are not doing right now with remote work, is that they're trying to just be synced up at the same time all the time. So either being on Zoom calls is being synced up at your computer at the same time, or being at Slack on Slack is being synced up at the same time. But when you're remote and you have different people across in different locations, different time zones, working async is really what companies need to work towards. So letting people work when at the time they need and access information and work across time zones, right? So commenting and working inside of like a project management tool allows people to access all of the history of the work and chime in on commenting and getting something done on their time, and everybody can work within that time together, right? And like allows for deep work instead of this Zoom and fatigue and Slack fatigue that people are feeling. And then third is sharing everything so that There are, everybody can access and search, and there's audio files for everything. There's written files for everything. And again, you just have like not a breakdown of knowledge. So those are the things that we've kind of focused on. And if you take a company, like any company, and you just put everybody at home and Slack and Zoom, like these are the things that are not working properly, right? Like people don't have the right access. They're not working async. They can't find the information they need. There's a breakdown of how people are working. They're exhausted because they're on Zoom all day. And so we just spend a lot of time tinkering and figuring out like, how do we make this work for remote first people?
It's certainly top of mind with everything happening right now. And I think one of the biggest takeaway is that you're right. I think a lot of companies naturally in the beginning from 2020, they're very reactive when the whole world was turning upside down. And most companies, you know, they were fully in office, they just had to switch, right, to fully remote and expect things to work. And I think the takeaway, what you said, is what I find interesting is a lot of companies that are still maybe the systems and they're created in a way and they're optimized for in office. And if you just push people to work virtually at home, they're just going to bounce back to that core systems and process, the foundation, if it doesn't change or if it doesn't evolve. And so I think that totally makes sense. What are your thoughts about like the daily stand-ups though that teams and companies do, let's say every Monday at 9 a.m.? Like, do you think that doesn't work if you have a remote team across like different time zones?
Yeah, that's funny that you bring this up because I'm actually having a discussion right now. I'm part of a really great community called Running Remote, and they have a Slack community where a bunch of remote founders are part of. And these are the types of things that we discuss. Currently, we are looking at how we get rid of any meetings on the calendar that can be done async. And it takes thinking about things differently. I think you saw that, was it Shopify just announced that they got rid of all meetings on the calendar, right? So there's some noise about people getting rid of meetings. I don't think it's possible to get rid of meetings forever, but like something to us, like a daily stand-up, this is what remote first companies are doing in an async manner. So for instance, there might be a Slack channel or a place in ClickUp or a project management tool where either one time on a Monday, any time of day on a Monday, or any time of day during the week, you need to answer three questions. Like, you know, what's the status of your goals? What did you complete last week? Kind of a thing. And it varies from company to company. And a lot of development companies do this daily, right? So I'm thinking about, do I ask my team to do this daily, which feels a little bit micromanaging to me, but it's kind of what they do in the development world, or do we do this on a weekly basis? But no matter what, we're going to do it async. We will never schedule a weekly meeting on the calendar. Like, I have kind of a thing against weekly repeating meetings. And a lot of this like can be read in three bullet points, right? Like, we don't all need to spend an hour on the phone. And you, then, as an agency owner, knows that specifically to agencies, hours are our biggest asset, people hours, right? And how much my people cost me. If I get 40 people on the phone to talk about a daily stand-up that they can just write in a project management tool and post, that costs me 40 hours times $60 to $150 an hour, however much people are, right? And so that's a very expensive call. But you can save all that time and just have people post something async, and everybody will still read it, right? So we're really trying to look at like all of our meetings and shifting to async just because it allows people to work better, right? Like, we're trying to also stick to no more than 3 Zoom calls a day across the whole company. Like, if you're trying to schedule a call with someone, they already have 3 meetings, like put it on another day. Because if you're working 6 hours a day, like we do, because we only have 32 hour weeks, or whatever, 4 to 6 hours a day, you need time to do your work and not just sit on Zoom, right? So we're kind of anti-Zoom meetings. We're trying to move away from Zoom.
It's so refreshing to hear. And that's actually very thought-provoking. So let's go back to your company. How big are you today for the audience? Thank you for sharing all that great insight with remote. I'm sure we can have a podcast or many just dedicated on that topic.
Yeah.
But thank you. I really do appreciate you sharing and opening up.
Yeah. We're about 42 people now. I think we're expanding probably to 45 this quarter, because we're doing most of our hiring in Q1 for the year. But yeah, so we're about 40 people across different locations, most of us in the US, but we do have certain people sitting in various other locations. Like, I think we have Switzerland, Britain, Honduras, Mexico, et cetera.
What's your favorite go-to method to like finding and recruiting and ultimately closing people? Like, do you use job boards? Do you use referrals, word of mouth? I'm sure you've seen from your point of view, recruiting for a lot of talent is a huge plus, right? I think if you just put the word out there and you just put the word remote company, remote position, 100%, you'll just get a deluge, just a flood of applicants just on that alone.
Yeah.
So I'm sure like that helps you guys. I'm sure that helped you guys.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so there's a lot actually there, because people is my number one thing that I care about and focus on at the agency now, culture and people. So bringing in the right people and keeping people is very important if you want to have a good business, right? People are your best asset. So I just reached the place in my business last year where we hired our first kind of HR people person that was able to focus and help us here. And so we hired a head of people, we got an applicant tracking system, and we mostly post, you know, through the applicant tracking system on different job boards, LinkedIn being the most fruitful, but also the most frustrating. But then we, what was the second thing you asked me? Because I had something really good to add. Like what we...
What are your favorite kind of methods, tools, channels?
The remote thing. Yeah. Like, you are not kidding. I mean, the amount of talent that we are able to recruit right now is mind blowing, because people want to work this way. So we've worked really hard on like outlining our culture and how we let people work. And people are like flocking. Like, we're getting 100, 200 people, applicants, really impressive people, people that have worked at Meta or whatever. People just want to leave because they want to work remote, and they don't want to work 40, 60 hour week. So honestly, our culture has been our biggest recruiting tool.
I'm not surprised. I can't tell you how many times we interfaced with companies and founders, and they just insist on either a full office or some sort of hybrid, or they're just convinced that the future is hybrid. That may be so, but I think the demand for fully remote is never going to wane. It's always going to be really, really strong. If anything, it'll probably, you know, keep rising.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it and because of that, it gives fully remote companies like an added advantage, right? It's just like, this increases your inbound. Of course, a lot of the inbound might not be relevant or might not be the best fit, but hey, nevertheless, it still helps you and build a really great pipeline. One more follow-up thought, actually, I just remembered about our async conversation. So I thought that having a week without any set consistent meetings is intriguing, because like for me and my team, we do daily set meetings. I can't even fathom until now what a reality would look like without daily standups or meetings. And now you challenged me, and now this is going to be in the back of my brain even after we speak. So I thank you. Like, I'm all about new ideas and different ideas. So if you don't do meetings, and all you do to kind of, you know, make sure that people understand what their expectations are for that day or that week by answering three questions or so, how do you maintain like the human physical kind of component in a remote culture? In other words, like, how do you must also do like, you know, virtual happy hours or virtual events really, really well, so that people, if they do want to interact with people, like, you know, they want to see actual human faces on their computer screen, that they have the chance to do so. So what do you do as a company as well to also make sure like that part of that culture is really strong?
Yeah. So thank you for that. Because when I say we don't do meetings, we reserve video meetings for those team building instances, right? Which are very important. So we would never do something where Shopify just deleted all meetings forever, right? So I'm saying we don't want to do meetings anymore for things that can just be status updates, written bullets in a document, or reading a document where people can read it and review it by themselves, kind of a thing. We reserve video meetings for our monthly all hands, where the entire company gets on and we do a fun culture thing. We go round robin. We share business updates. We highlight team members. We pass out awards, kind of a thing. We always do video meetings for one-on-ones with managers or team leads, so that you can see faces when you're giving feedback or sharing important things. We also do team lead videos with each other, like maybe bi-weekly or once a month, where we're getting a whole team on the phone video. And we do culture things like a quarterly business book club on video where people can join, and we send out the books and we talk, we discuss it at the end of the quarter. Or we do donut dates is a big thing at our company. So in Slack, there's an app called Donut, and you can, a lot of companies do this. You can be paired with someone on Slack every 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, whatever it is. So we do 4 weeks, not, and you're not allowed to talk about work, just 30 minute meetings with other people at the company. And people love those. Like, it's just a chance to kind of get to know people one-on-one and talk about non-work things. And so, yeah, we do a little bit of culture. We make sure that like video is on for the right meetings, but not for every meeting.
Makes sense. Going back to FPS and your company, you know, I alluded to you guys as a growth marketing agency. That can mean a lot of different things. So do you provide all marketing services across all channels, different types of online digital campaigns? Are you more focused and specialized around SEO or paid? Like, what do you do? Or is it all of the above?
Yeah, no, we're definitely not all the things. We're a growth marketing only for product-led brands. So any product-led brand that wants to drive acquisition or traffic qualified leads, that's our wheelhouse. We've only worked with tech brands, product-led brands, the whole 7 years that we've been staying. And our services are growth-focused. So anything that's going to drive first page results in Google, right? Whether that's SEO or paid marketing. So we do SEO, content, lead generation, and paid are our biggest channels.
Gotcha.
And then, that's going to like drive growth.
Do you work with all different types of companies, or is it only a certain type of size, certain sector?
Well, I would say all different types of companies. It's more probably of like a late stage startup to mid-range tech brand, because you have to have the budget to pay for our team, because we do offer more of like, this is your growth team. Like, we can give you 3 to 6 marketers, and we want to make sure that we're doing integrated marketing. So we want to make sure that we're working on your SEO and your paid and your landing pages and your content strategy, because that's what we believe is really going to drive growth. And so that's, you know, about 12 to 15 grand a month is our starting prices. And so you have to be at a point where you're making enough in revenue to invest that much in marketing.
So you're almost like a, hey, no need to like hire or rush to hire growth marketers internally. Like, you can use us, and we're not just going to offer you just a SEO service. We're a package service where if your objective, your umbrella is growth, we can provide that as like a one-stop shop.
Exactly. Yeah. And we really like to integrate into the companies that we work with. We want to like be able to talk to the 1 or 2 marketers you might already have. We want to work with your product team, your customer service team. We want to sit on your calls. Like, we are part of your extension of your brand, right? So it's really like bespoke and kind of fully integrated. And we only work with a small handful of brands that we find the business to be fun or whatever, because we're a smaller kind of boutique agency. So that's what we've outlined.
Sounds like you guys are doing pretty well for yourself. I think that's great. I think it's all agencies' goals to reach a point in business where they can be selected with their clients. And I think it's just so inspirational to hear someone like yourself who just dove into kind of a lot of things at first, moving out of the US and starting your own. And now it's not like, you know, you started something, failed, you started something again, failed. This is like your first thing that you started 7 years down the line. Here you are doing better than ever. So I think that's a really, really kind of a huge inspiration for a lot of people. If you never moved to Belize, if you never moved to Belize and you're still in the States, but you ultimately and also ended up choosing to work for yourself, would it have still been like fully remote as well?
I think so. I mean, I sometimes think this is funny. Like, when I was at my very first startup job in Seattle, back when I was, God, I don't even know, it must've been like 26 years old or 25 or something, I really wanted to move to San Francisco at that time. And I remember asking my boss at that time, hey, would you let me work remote from San Francisco? Because all my job has always kind of been online for quite a while, right? And he said no. But that was the first point, like, you know, way back then when that was 15 years ago at this point, when I was like seeking out a remote lifestyle. I really like to kind of bop around and see different places. And I've never been one for sticking in the same location, and I'm not so great at routine. So I think that the remote lifestyle has been my calling, like no matter where it would have been.
If you were to go back in time and do your career all over again, would it still be marketing? Would you have tried something else?
I think so. I think I have not been bored a day in my life in marketing. Like, it is a wild ride. Like, it has changed so much. It is so fascinating. It is so like rewarding with how you can grow a brand. And I just think it's super fun and it's always changing. You got to stay on top of everything. So yeah, I just love the fast paced kind of, the fast pace to it.
What would you say to those who are thinking about pursuing a field in marketing, or those who just started or who are maybe a couple of years in? Do you still think marketing is a great domain to have a wonderful, fulfilling career in? Are there certain aspects within marketing that maybe you'd recommend? I know growth marketing specifically is pretty new. The actual words using growth marketing in tech hasn't been around for a while. And so I know that with that, you see performance and demand gen and product marketing as well. What are your thoughts?
I think marketing is so specialized now. Like, we have a niche person on our team for everything. We have a content expert, SEO expert, lead gen expert, UX expert, UX writing expert. Like, it just depends on what you're passionate about, and you can find a marketing role for that, right? Like, if you're more science and data focused, like something like PPC or acquisition marketing or SEO would be a great place for you. If you're more creative, then, you know, either design, landing page design, website design is a great place for you. There's a marketing component there as well. And so I don't know, there's just so many different facets. It kind of just depends on what you like to do. You can find a marketing career. If you want to make the most money in marketing, it's definitely acquisition focused marketing. Like, the highest paid marketers are performance marketers. And honestly, SEO, like, please, people, just go into SEO. There's a limited amount of SEO people out there. They're hard to recruit. They're extremely sought after. They can charge what they want to because it's like a black magic no one can understand. And so I personally would tell everybody to go into SEO.
You heard it from Gianna, folks, directly. Go into SEO. And what is the future of FPS? Like, are you just, you know, slowly trucking forward, slowly continue to grow your team, continue to work with, you know, really engaging clients that you believe in?
Yeah, we have a big year ahead of us. I'm super excited. We've been following which you've had to have talked about this on your show, the Entrepreneur Operating System, for the last year, EOS. Yeah. So we did a really fun planning session. We got all of our rocks in place next year, and we've got some big fun things going. We're going to try to lay out a global expansion program to hire full-time in other countries. We are definitely looking to bring on some exciting new clients this year. Really ramping up in our growth. Yeah, it's going to be a good year, I think.
That's happy to hear. If you are hiring for your team, or you will be hiring for a team in the future, what are some positions that you think there'll be, and where can people go ahead and apply if they're interested?
Yeah, so we're always looking for anything marketing focused. While our main services are what I listed earlier, SEO, content, lead gen, data. We do a lot more than that for our biggest client. We're full scale for our biggest client. And so any marketing, but we do look for experts, right? So you have to have like minimum 3 to 5 years in your channel for us to hire you. So if you're any sort of marketing expert, then we encourage you to apply. We like build out our talent pool all the time, constantly. We have a general application on our careers page on our website at firstpagestrategy.com.
And what would be like an advice to the audience for those that just want to follow in your footsteps? Maybe it's a really fulfilling, accomplished career. Maybe it's to take that leap of faith to start something and bet on themselves. If you had to give like one giant blank advice, like, what would it be?
I would say not to wait for the point where you're comfortable, or look for the perfect sign. Like I said earlier, the universe rewards giant leaps of faith, I think. And so it'll all work out. You just need to take that first step and kind of move away from sitting in the fear stage and just go for it. Like, just do it, honestly. Like, just do it. If I wouldn't have followed this I mean, my life has completely changed in ways I could not even have fathomed that are so fun and so great. I couldn't even imagine being where I was, you know, 7 years ago in the same place. And so, yeah, just take the step. That's what I'd say.
And lastly, what is the biggest selling factor of visiting or moving to Belize, if people are curious?
Oh gosh, the people, they're so freaking wonderful. I mean, they're like some of the kindest people in the whole world. Central Americans in general. It's just so nice to have a community and really connect with the people you live next to, which I didn't ever have in San Francisco. It was very anonymous and kind of solo in a big city. And so living in a place where everybody is really kind and smiles and some jokes, it was like totally life-changing for me at the time. I really notice the difference when I go back to the US now. And so, yeah, so Latin America is where it's at.
Gotcha. Thank you. And now it's on my list of places to visit in the immediate future. But Gianna, cool. Just want to thank you so much for your time and for your honesty.
Yeah.
And for you willing to be
thank
open
you.
And sharing everything about your journey, how you moved to the States, how you found ways to establish really fantastic harmonious balance in your life with your professional life, and how you're able to just master the remote culture at your company. And for someone who's a first-time entrepreneur, 7 years later, now has a team of 40 plus working with fantastic clients. It really is an inspiration, not just to me, I'm sure, to
Thank
a lot
you.
Of other people who are listening in. So I will certainly
Thank
be
you.
From one smaller agency owner to another agency owner. I just want to thank you for your time. and it's, you know, you definitely inspire us to kind of keep leveling up and just look at things differently to kind of challenge norms, specifically going back to like the remote and async insights and recommendations that you're able to share. So I will certainly keep that in mind and most likely reach out to you sometime in the future for more advice if you're open and willing. But yeah, thank you so much
cool.
again. And I think marketing media is something that I think I would have done if I didn't go into recruiting myself. I love the field and it's really cool to see what you've built, and we'll be rooting for you from the sidelines. So thank you again.
Thank you, Preston. That's so kind. Yes, thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. But I'm grateful again for your time and thank you so much. And we'll certainly keep in touch and wish you nothing but absolute success in 2023.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe for other great stories that are coming up. If you need any help with hiring, know of anyone who's looking for a job, or would like to be a guest on this podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at www.kickstartfinder.com. Really, really appreciate it, and we'll see you on the next one.